I'm 52. The 29th of April 2005 to the 28th of April 2006. Above. Never Mind the Bollocks by Dominic Parker. Bollocks! I didn't know I should have shaved my balls. I'm sitting in an outpatient's waiting room, finally reading the NHS vasectomy pamphlet given to me by my doctor some weeks before. He'd made mention of a tidy up down below there, slightly awkwardly. But to read the pamphlet, it's all in there. I cast my gaze around the room. My fellow patients are all male, all strictly eyes down. We are a job lot, alone with our thoughts. I look at the reception, which is in an adjoining room with a glass-fronted counter framed in this room. If it wasn't for the stark fluorescent lighting, it could be a ticket office in a music venue with various NHS posters and leaflets looking like posters and flyers for up-and-coming gigs. I try to conjure thoughts of a band sound-checking behind the large double doors. But I know very different instruments are being prepared for me in there. Last night, while standing stark bollock naked in front of the mirror, admiring my toned felon's body, I brought together for the first time the words man and scape. Well, giving my lengthening, middle-aged bollocks a trim with my trusted scissors. My mind wandered to the ditch duty I had embraced, the joy of physical activity, and to be witness to nature in all its beauty, where nature simply does. Perhaps I will become a professional felon, get my buzz from the punishment, not the crime. But 17 will wait for no man. My thoughts then turned to Chaka Khan, perhaps, for the last time in a while. I make it more than a physical dream. I want to rock you, Chaka. Chaka, baby, I want to rock you. I get up to browse the other pamphlets. As I approach the receptionist, Big Brother chatter dies away, and I hear Elvis on the radio. Elvis had 3 number ones in the past year on what would have been his 70th birthday year, some 28 years after his infamous number 2. If I get to 70, I would like to be an elderly gentleman by then. But if I was dead, how would I be remembered? I imagine the cult of my personality gathering to reenact the man, all hand in hand in front of a burning effigy. If only they knew, I yearn of a pharaoh's legacy. Then I hear, just like a willow, we would cry an ocean if we lost true love and sweet devotion. The words make me shudder. And I hear Scissor Man calling me, coming into ascendance when thoughts turn dark. I know what he wants. He wants what Joe wanted for Michael. He promises me a deal and gets my attention. I go into the toilet. Scissor Man urges me into the cubicle. The urinals are not in his plan. The following is best described as a 40-second play. First, Scissor Man. I am Scissor Man. My job is to remove the unnecessary. My ethic is less is more. I'm not here to punish you. I don't want you dressed to go. You will always be best before death. I just want what is best for you.
Bill Drummond remains silent.
Scissor Man continues. The surgeon's cut won't be deep enough. Your bollocks rocks have grown too big for their proverbial sack, celebrating their fame of association. You know I'm telling the truth, Bill. You've heard the whispers, read the articles. Bill Drummond must have massive set of bollocks. Bill Drummond talks bollocks, and so on. Your bollocks are a distraction to all the multi-Drummond's work. Take out your scissors and do your best little Richard while performing their coup de grace, dispatching those fuckers down the bowl. Come on, Bill. I know you believe in rock and roll.
Bill Drummond remains silent, but his hand goes towards his jacket pocket and removes his scissors. His right bollock begins to talk.
Don't listen to him, Bill. He's the one talking bollocks. You can cut that verse, but our connection must remain.
And then his left bollock talks. In dreams I walk with you. In dreams I talk to you. In dreams you're mine all the time. We're together in dreams, in dreams.
Bill Drummond's right bollock answers. Ha! He never speaks, Bill. He just quotes lyrics. I had better tell you our secrets before it's too late. I'm called Ben. I'm righteous and hang on the right. My colleague hanging beside me is called Arian. He is a dreamer and serves you food for thought. We refer to you as Abba. You see, the three of us form your holy trinity. We make you whole. If you were to chop Arian off, the balance would shift. Your righteousness would know no bounds. Look past your obvious monarchid and consider Napoleon and Mao. Or have a pint with Nigel Farage and tell us if he is a balanced man. If you chop me off, you'd only dream like Sid, and nothing would be done. The Scissor Man is one out of control. He won't be happy until all evidence of you has been redacted. Next, he will turn his attention to your penis, saying it is where your vanity and ego are stored, and all here now, you like putting it where you shouldn't. He still blames us for stopping you cutting off your hand. He only knows how to cut, never create. He seeks to blind you to the truth.
Bill Drummond's left bollock.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding is all you see.
Ha! You see, Bill, you must embrace the contradictions of yourself. Then everything will be the Moody Blues.
One day, I hope we'll be in perfect harmony, a planet with one mind. Then I could tell you all the things in my head.
And the Scissor Man's back. You really buy into all this bollocks, Bill. Get a grip and flush those fuckers away.
A loud knocking brings the end of the play. Then I hear, Bill Drummond! Is there a Bill Drummond here? They're ready for you to go in now. I have my scissors in my right hand and my bollocks in my left hand. It's all a load of bollocks. It's all a load of bollocks. It's all a load of bollocks and bollocks to it all.
Hello. Was It Worth It? By Adam Fenn. In the summer of 2005, I got the absolute shite kicked out of me by a bunch of three lads. I don't think I did much wrong to provoke them. Who can say, anyway? It was probably just a wrong place, wrong time kind of thing. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I was walking through town at night and one of them started shouting at me. I smiled at him as I brushed by and he pushed me, hard. I fell back harder, and the other two followed up with kicks to my face and body as I lay on the ground. Strange things run through your mind when things like this happen. You half expect a survival instinct to rise up and your fight or flight response to kick in, but it didn't. I remember just lying there in the gutter, with dream stuff running through my head as they battered me. It wasn't too bad, a few stitches in my chin, my arm in a sling, and I was left sore for a few days. It could have been worse, but it was a definite bad thing that happened to me, and it fucking hurt. If it had happened to me earlier in my life, I reckon I would have fought them back, or at least tried to run away, but for whatever reason, I let them get on with it and express their anger on me with their shoes. The bastards. I got home and my kids were really worried about me, which was nice and comforting. They came to see me and we talked for a long time. I think they thought I could have died. It was good to see them and see the proof that they cared for and loved me. They were calling me every day, weeks, maybe even months after it had happened. I could see what had happened had upset people close to me. It got me thinking, and I found myself falling into my thoughts. I wondered if I might be being screwed up and upset by it all, too. I couldn't completely brush off the kicking I'd received. I didn't want to come across as a victim or anything like that. Neither did I want to come across as a vindictive person. Let it go, I thought. So I tried to have a break from things. I went driving around to think, up and down the A12 mostly with the radio on, stopping to paint blackbirds on the walls under the junctions. I felt lacking in energy. I had some ideas for projects too, some of which happened, some of which didn't. I thought about erecting a huge TV screen where, somehow, you could write a computer program to play out every single permutation of those pixels flashing different colors in perfect sequential order. Over time, probably millions, if not billions of years, the screen would display every possible image that ever existed and would exist amongst the white noise. If you sat down and looked at the screen, you'd mostly be confronted with a pixelated mess, but every now and again, those pixels would light up in an order and reveal a recognizable image. You might see a dog, the face of someone you know, the title card of a movie you have never seen. If you sat in front of the screen for eternity, it would display every conceivable image that could ever exist. I thought that this might be some kind of grand idea, a way to make everything knowable and visible. I thought about this idea for a little while, and then I went off it. It seemed too difficult to pull off, and a bit pointless, maybe? In and around the other stuff I had to do, I did some interviews and gave talks about art to people, I tried to stop thinking about art for a while. I printed out 1,000 business cards with my number on that said to call this number if you want help. Then I drove around some more, putting the cards through the doors of people. From then on, I dedicated myself to answering the calls that came through and providing help. And it was great. Could not have gone better. I was baking cakes for strangers, fixing washing machines, building sheds, doing tip runs, hanging pictures, laying carpet. I replaced the laser on a kid's PlayStation. It took a month for the part to arrive. I fitted it myself and it worked. It would have been much easier and probably cheaper to buy him a new one, but it seemed a bit kinder, more thoughtful, and more helpful to do it the long way round. I was proud of what I achieved. I did some sewing, repaired torn clothes, lots of ironing. I put a roof on a shed. I cut down trees and I put in a kitchen. Mowed lawns. I put in doors. It was all working out. I felt sparks again. I went walking along the coast by Dunwich. It's bleak and desolate in places, but there's a rugged beauty to it. You can sometimes see the herb Alexander growing wild. Roman soldiers used to eat it. I walked the cliff tops for a little while, looking down. Every time it's different, the shingle on the beach moving in its own arrangements and sequences. I have always wanted to do things that don't make much sense to anyone, least of all to me. Tantalizingly out of reach, growing halfway down the cliff, was a bunch of Alexander. Taking it very easy, I started to edge my way down and extended my hand out to the plant, my other hand grabbing a clump of grass to steady myself. Then the obvious happened. I lost my grip. And as I slid down that slope, ready to face the inevitable stitches and hospital stay, I thought to myself, was it worth it?
A Troubled Dream. Eyes Wide Shut by Aidan O'Keefe. Every night since my 44th birthday, April 29th, 1997, as you're asking, the pattern plays out. Eyes wide shut, restless, heartbeat decreases, a calm, then voices, the screamers. We have the same conversation. It begins with me stating my case. I just want a good night's sleep. Let me please have a different dream tonight. I deserve a proper sleep. They say, shush, and tell me my quest. It doesn't change. The screamers use the same text. You, who are so determined to kick over all traces of a musical past. You, who bristles at mentions of burning. You, who can't decide if you are an Scissor Man or not. Your quest is to locate the mask. You need to find that mask and set fire to it. Accept your quest. Go. I am guided by these voices that resemble toenails being scraped down a whiteboard. They've set the quest, and I've got to do their bidding. There's zero point arguing with the screamers. And believe me, I've tried. I am Scissor Man, after all. The mask that I've got to find? This is where the screamers are contradicting themselves. The mask is the trout mask replica worn by Captain Beefheart on the cover of his 1969 album of the same title. The screamers know that I'm done with music. So the inconsistent bastards send me on a quest to find a rare music-related artefact. Ever get the feeling you've been cheated? For some godforsaken reason, the mask is always located in Afghanistan. So the end point of the quest is the same every night. However, the journey is different each time. Thus far along, 25 years and counting, dealing with the screamers, the quest and the mask, I've visited every country on the globe at least twice, some multiple times. New countries like East Timor and South Sudan have sprung up over this time, and I've walked across them. Although the quest takes place in the present day, I have no phone or Google Maps to assist me. The scrolls I work off are from the 18th century, which adds enormously to the jollity. My compass is a cheapo pound shop knockoff. In my bare feet, I pass through these countries that are randomly glued together. I cross no sea, Even in my dreams, I do not walk in water. Make of that what you will. I'm never in no man's land. On any given night, I could visit Sri Lanka, Turkmenistan, Ecuador, Syria, Belgium and Chad. There's a name sign at each country's land border. The local currency appears in my wallet. I venture east, forever eastwards, towards Afghanistan and the mask. I never look back. And I'm never alone. Apart from the screamers tracking my trekking from the sky above, with me in each journey is a ragbag assortment of random famous people, old school friends, family members and acquaintances from the music business. My companions could be my early childhood pal, Sam Funai, US pop singer Debbie Gibson, great-great-uncle Tom in my mother's side, Patty Hearst, Winnie Mandela, and Scottish rugby player John Jeffreys. It could be Buzz Aldrin, John Coltrane, Aristotle, Doc Cotton, and Mrs. Jolly from the shop in Newton Stewart. Basically, anyone who ever lived could be on the quest with me. There is no pattern, no rhyme, no reason, which is lovely. We talk about life as we go. Lines I've said over the years in interviews about art, the universe, the price of mackerel, etc. are revisited. We don't argue. We don't discuss the quest. There is no hustle or panic or sense of rushing. We stop for coffees. We listen to each other. We eat local delicacies. It's a tranquil way to fall through life, to tumble through sleep. Even if I do crave some variety, a break from the treadmill of the quest. The dream is sedate, but my sleep is invariably fitful. All the while as we stride onwards, we talk as friends. With Ian Curtis among our merry troop, we still didn't walk in silence. The chatter stops, however, when we see Afghanistan in the near distance. Our revels are now ended. We look at the country where the quest finishes. We do not move forward. You see, I told a lie earlier when I said I visited every country. I've never crossed into Afghanistan. I've never ventured through the signs at the border crossing. No one has. The quest remains uncompleted. Is this why my rest is so patchy? One time, we had an Irish writer called Ralph Mexico with us. At Journey's End, he recited a short poem. We came so far for beauty, even the screamers were impressed. We fulfilled our duty without ever completing the quest. It's become a nightly tradition that we recite this poem within sight of the Afghanistan border. Honestly, cancer-stricken orphans peeling onions couldn't cause more tears. We follow this up by singing, true to the trail, while we sit around in a circle, nursing our coffees. At the end, we applaud. The screamers leave us, shouting obscenities as they fly away. Our crowd disperses. I begin to emerge from behind the wall of sleep. I gently awaken. It's always close to the dawn, not quite as dark as a dungeon. I get up and pour myself a glass of water. I watch the first lights appear through my kitchen window.